Welcome to Ball Games and Beyond, your go-to podcast for all things sports. Brought to you by SportsNot.com. Join us as we dive into the hottest headlines and trending topics in the world of sports.
Jordan, open, Chicago with the lead!
Covering everything from the NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, to NCAA.
And Bonds hits right high! It's a deep!
So, whether you're a diehard fan or just love a good game, Ball Games and Beyond is your ticket to taking your passion for sports to the next level. And now, here's your host, Evan Grote.
Hello, sports fans, and welcome back to Ball Games and Beyond. I am your host, Evan Grote, and Ball Games and Beyond is brought to you by SportsNot.com. Please go out there and give us a follow on our YouTube channel by searching SportsNot. You can follow us, click that notifications bell as well, so that you're always getting all the new video content that we make available for you guys each and every week. You can also, if you prefer to get your podcast in just audio form, you can follow the show there as well by searching Ball Games and Beyond on many of the major podcasting platforms. And don't be afraid to leave us a 5-star review and rating if you would be so kind. Now, the topic, once again, of this week's show, we're going to focus on the NCAA tournament. We talked tournament snubs last week. That's right, the Big East. They felt like they got disrespected. It looks like they took that disrespect personally. They've looked really good. The three teams that got in have looked really good so far, winning each of their two games, 6-0 for the Big East right now in the tournament. All their teams still alive in the Sweet 16. But for this week, what I want to focus on is we do have 16 teams left, and if you look at those teams, you don't have a real traditional Cinderella story still alive in the tournament, and that's rare because usually in this tournament, we do get some of those lower-seeded teams sneaking into the Sweet 16, but that's not the case this year. I suppose you could say NC State, maybe Clemson. They generally don't fit my prototypical fit as a Cinderella team, especially NC State with the conference they play in, Power 5 conference. They beat Duke and North Carolina to get into the to win the ACC tournament, I should say. And you know, they've actually the school traditionally, now I know it's a year to year type of thing, but traditionally NC State has had some success in the NCAA tournament. So to me, I don't believe there's any Cinderella stories left, and I want to know, do you think that's good or bad for the tournament? And one of the other things that I was examining this week is, why is that? Is this a trend that could possibly continue for years to come? I mean, the NCAA tournament, we know, is there's a lot of luck involved. It's a lot about matchups and schematically, you know, each team matching up against different styles of play. But when I tell you, when I share with you a couple of the ideas why I think we're seeing a lack of underdogs advance in this year's tournament, maybe you'll change your mind on that. We're also going to have a guest this week. Our guest is Zach Braziller, who's a sports writer for the New York Post, and he's been covering this tournament like a glove. He's been all over it. He's got a lot of great articles available on in the New York Post. You can check it out online, and you can follow Zach on X at @NYPost_Brazil, B-A-R-Z-I-L-L-E. With that being said, let's jump into it here. Just a couple of my thoughts before we get started. We saw a lot of great basketball in the opening weekend of the tournament. I think one of the more exciting games, we saw a couple of overtime thrillers, Creighton involved in a double overtime game, and then Houston winning an overtime thriller as well on Sunday night. But there's been a lot of good games here. The Oakland story was very good, upsetting Kentucky, right? So there's been some good basketball played here, and I'm expecting to see plenty more good basketball here this coming weekend in the Sweet 16. Now, again, the focus of the show this week is there's no Cinderellas left. We have one double-digit seed still alive in the tournament, and that is NC State, and I want to know why. And so I was thinking about it this week, and I came up with two ideas as to why I think we're not seeing the underdogs still playing in the Sweet 16 of the tournament. My first reason why I think we're not seeing these teams, and you may disagree with me, and that's okay, but number one, I think, is the NIL. I think the NIL is, obviously, we know it's kind of changed the landscape of college sports. If you think about college basketball particularly, even just 10 or 15 years ago, we were in the era of the one and done. We saw players who were coming in as freshmen because they had to, because of the rule that they could not go straight to the NBA. And we would see these kids come in, play 1 year, and then go straight to the NBA. And that's still happening in many cases, but we're also seeing where you have guys who maybe didn't have the freshman season that they were expecting. A kid like Bronny James, for example. He came in with a lot of hype, of course, because of his father. And he didn't have the freshman year that he was hoping. I think many people thought he would be a one and done, and he still may be. But there's some incentive there for him to stick around and maybe try to develop a little bit more. And that's the money he is making through the NIL. And I think you're seeing that in a lot of cases. So I think that's one of the reasons. And then I think the other reason that maybe we're seeing some more of the higher end teams still alive in the tournament is the transfer portal, right? That's another thing that has completely changed the landscape of college sports, especially as of late. And I'm going to use the example of Dalton Knecht in Tennessee as my number one example there. Dalton Knecht was a guy who played, started out his career in a junior college, then transferred to Northern Colorado, played 2 years there. Now, he wasn't the star there that he is now, but he leaves a mid-major team to go to a high major Power Five conference in the SEC with Tennessee, and you're plucking a really high end player who could be a huge difference maker had he stuck around and played at Northern Colorado and developed at the same rate he did at Tennessee. That's not the case anymore. It's almost like the rich get richer is the point that I'm making. So I do think the NIL has played a role in this, as well as the transfer portal, and just overall when you look at the construction of these rosters, again, going back to that one and done theory, we're seeing a lot of older rosters. And that was not the case 15, 20 years ago. It was the case back in the 80s. And even before that, players stayed 4 years. That's just what they did. And then we went through the one and done era. And now I feel like it's kind of coming full circle where you're seeing players stick around a little bit longer. So that's some of my thoughts on why we're seeing what we're seeing this year. Will it continue? Who knows? I guess we'll find out here in a couple years. I think 1 year is not a large enough sample size, but it's just some of the research that I've been doing and some of the thinking and you know, again, investigating into, you know, why this is happening this year. So I'd like to get some of your thoughts on that. Feel free to reach out to me. Send me a direct message on X if you want. You can follow me on Twitter at egroat5, and my DMs are always open. So let me know what you think. If you're out there listening and you want to chime in, let me know how you feel about this. All right, guys, I'm going to step aside for a quick break. And when I return, we're going to be joined by our guest, Zach Braziller, sports writer from the New York Post. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the Sweet 16, intriguing matchups, recap of the opening weekend of the tournament. We're going to get some of Zach's thoughts on whether he thinks a lack of Cinderella teams going forward in the tournament is good or bad for the tournament. Don't go anywhere. All of that and more coming up next on Ball Games and Beyond. And welcome back to Ball Games and Beyond. And now joining us is our guest this week, sports writer from the New York Post, Zach Braziller, is joining us. And Zach's been covering the NCAA tournament very closely. In fact, he's got an article up in the New York Post right now where he talks about the main topic of our show, which is the lack of Cinderellas in the Sweet 16 right now, which, again, we're going to chat about that with him and some other things, as well as, some teams that are intriguing him in the Sweet 16 matchups that he's looking forward to, and just a brief recap of the opening weekend of the tournament. So, Zach, before we do that, how are you doing today?
Good, man. I'm getting ready to go to Boston in the morning. So, you know, I'm doing all right.
Very good. You're going to take those games in live. That's exciting.
Yep. I'll be good for the weekend.
Very good. Now, I just want to start with kind of a recap of the opening weekend of the tournament. Not a ton of drama. We saw a couple of upsets. The Kentucky losing to Oakland, I think, was the big one. But other than the obvious answer in UConn, was there another team that impressed you in the first two in their first two games or wins of the tournament?
Yeah, look, there were a few. I was impressed by Purdue. You know, I mean, I've never really been big on them. You know, they find a way to lose these games in March. I thought Utah State would give them a game, and I was impressed by just how dominant Purdue was. I mean, they destroyed Utah State, a good team, won the Mountain West. Purdue was very impressive. Arizona was very impressive. Another team that's, you know, kind of struggled in the tournament the last few years after really good regular seasons. Those probably would be, you know, a few of them. I thought North Carolina was really good after a shaky start against Michigan State. Look, it's kind of the Goliath NCAA tournament so far. You know, the top eight seeds are all through, you know, first time since 2019. And I know some people love Cinderellas, and, you know, I do too. You do love the Cinderellas, but, you know, the bonus for when you don't get the Cinderella is some of these matchups, which are just, to me, are just awesome. You know, with Iowa State, Illinois, the number one offense in KenPom against the number one defense in KenPom. You know, I think Carolina, Alabama has the chance to be just terrific. Two just elite offenses. You know, Duke, Houston has the chance to be fun. Duke was really, really good in Brooklyn. I was there for that. They absolutely crushed James Madison after playing a very good game against Purdue. I think Creighton, Tennessee has the chance to just be an absolute blockbuster. And I think the Elite Eight, you're going to get some just absolute great games. I think it's really exciting just some of these matchups we have.
Yeah, I agree. And we're going to get into, you know, the lack of Cinderellas and some of those matchups in just a moment. But I kind of want to go back to the original point. You mentioned Purdue as a team that you thought has really impressed you. And I agree with you. And I think it was important for Purdue to get off to a good start because of the, you know, struggles that they've had in some of the recent tournaments, losing in the first round two of the last three tournaments. So I do think it was really important for them specifically to kind of quiet some of the skeptics that they've had kind of going into this tournament. Now, kind of staying on that, along that same line of questioning, is there a specific player? And again, maybe not Zach Edey because he's been so dominant in this tournament, but is there anyone else that you think has really stood out to you so far?
I mean, I think right now Terrence Shannon Jr. is the best player in the country. He's just going back to the Big Ten tournament. He's just been incredible his last, you know, I guess it's five games now. I think he's averaging over 30 a game. That's going to be fascinating just to see how that Iowa State defense handles him. We all know how good the Cyclones are on defense, and now they're facing the best offensive team in the country. Clearly, Shannon stands out. Tyler Kolick being Tyler Kolick after missing the end of the season was obviously a big thing in the first two rounds of the tournament. RJ Davis is, you know, as good a guard as there is in the country for North Carolina. He's a local guy, went to Archbishop Stepanak. Mm-hmm. He's from White Plains. And look, can't forget about Donovan Klingon. You know, he's really kind of hitting his stride here, both ends of the floor. You know, there are times late in the year where I kind of felt UConn was better on offense without him just because he kind of clogged things up. But the way he's been playing now, he's just such a difference maker at both ends. And look, he looks every bit deserving of that being a projected lottery pick. Yeah, look, there's so many really good players left in this tournament, and so many really good teams. It's gonna be really interesting to just see how it all shakes out.
Absolutely, that's another one of the benefits of having some of your more elite teams still alive in the tournament is you have a little bit higher end caliber of player as well. Before we switch topics, though, I do want to ask you about the Big East. Last week on the show, that was the major topic, was tournament snubs. And I spent a lot of time talking about the Big East and the fact that they felt they should have gotten more teams in. And we look at what the Big East has been able to do in the tournament, the three teams that did get in, winning, they're 6-0 right now, all advancing to the Sweet 16. Do you think that the Big East has made a statement in the tournament that maybe they should have gotten more respect?
Yeah, look, I felt they should have gotten more respect before the tournament. I mean, you also have to look at the fact that these were all top three seeds. So they were expected to get here. It's not, you know, a surprise they're here. I think for the Big East to make a real statement, they got to get two teams into the Final Four. That, to me, would really speak volumes. Like, you know, UConn absolutely crushed Northwestern. Creighton beat a dangerous Oregon team. You know, Marquette obviously took care of business. Although it was tough against Colorado, but those are games those teams should win. So, but you know, I mean, I thought it was ridiculous at the time that the Big East would only get three and the Mountain West would get six. I found it ridiculous that the committee picked Virginia over a Seton Hall team that beat UConn and Marquette, a Virginia team over picking Virginia over St. John's, which, you know, I understand maybe the resume of wins wasn't great, but if you have eyes and you watch that team play over the last month, they were clearly a tournament team, put up 90 on UConn, beat Creighton handily at the Garden, crushed Seton Hall in the Big East quarterfinals. I mean, it was obvious that's a tournament team. Sometimes you need to use common sense. But in terms of making a big statement, I think you get two teams in the Final Four, that would speak volumes. Look, if one of those three teams would have lost, it would kind of been a disaster. You're a top three seed. You're supposed to make the Sweet 16, especially when you're Marquette and Creighton and you're facing double-digit seeds. I know Oregon and Colorado were hot and played really well, but still, you're favorite. You're supposed to win those games. I'll be interested to see how the league does here. I expect UConn to get to the Final Four. I think Creighton, Tennessee is a game. I think the winner of that game is going to the Final Four will be Purdue. And then, obviously, I would expect Marquette to get by NC State, and then that's going to have an incredibly tough game, you know, whether it's Houston or Duke. But I do think there is a shot for one of those, you know, one of Creighton and Marquette to make it. Do I think it definitely happens? It's not definite. I pick Creighton to make the Final Four. I'm sticking with that. So I think if you get two Big East teams in the Final Four, that would clearly be a huge, huge statement.
Yeah, and then one of those teams who felt like they got the snub and didn't get into the tournament was Seton Hall, and I see they're playing in the quarterfinals of the NIT on Wednesday. And I know that's not the big tournament, but you know, if they're trying to kind of continue to make that case that, hey, we should have been in the tournament, winning the NIT would be a good way to do that. So I thought that was good to see there. Our guest this week on Ball Games and Beyond is Zach Braziller, sports writer from the New York Post, doing a great job here with us. All right, let's shift topics now. Let's kind of get to the main focus of the show, and that is the lack of Cinderella teams that are still alive in the NCAA tournament. And you know, I keep hearing from, or I keep reading and I keep hearing it from a lot of, you know, the people who cover the tournament, that this is a very chalky Sweet 16. You know, some people might point to a team like NC State, who's the 11 seed, as maybe a Cinderella. They don't really fit my, you know, prototypical Cinderella. They play in the ACC. They beat Duke and North Carolina in the ACC tournament. You know, traditionally the school has had some success in the tournament as well. This is not George Mason that we're talking about, or you know, FAU, or even you know, St. Peter's from a couple years ago. But overall, do you think this is a good thing for the tournament and you know, and its viewers, the fans of the games, that the tournament is lacking some of those underdogs?
I would say it's a good thing. I mean, it's just, this is what the tournament is. You know, some years you're going to have crazy Cinderellas and upsets. Some years you're not. You know, there was a stat by David Warlock, the great PR guy with the NCAA, and he posted on Twitter that this is the seventh lowest total of seeds in the history of the tournament. So, like, it's, you know, just like some years you get a ton of upsets and some years you don't. It's just the NCAA tournament, and that's why we love it, because it's so unpredictable. And, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't happen. Look, Oakland was very close, went to overtime with NC State, could have easily, you know, made it. You had some pretty cool stories, whether it was a James Madison winning its first main draw tournament game since 1983, Grand Canyon. So there, you know, there were upsets. They just, look, Grand Canyon, I thought, really had a shot there to beat Alabama, and they just kind of played a bad final 5 minutes. It's just the way the tournament is, that some years you're going to get crazy, crazy results, and some years you get this. And, you know, I think one of the pluses to this is absolute loaded games. Sometimes when you get these Cinderellas, you get bad games in the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight. I remember the year St. Peter's made the Elite Eight, and that was such a great story. We all loved it, and they got crushed by North Carolina in the Elite Eight. And, you know, sometimes those Cinderellas make for, as much fun as they are, they also make for, you know, bad games down the road. So I think right now this NCAA tournament is the Goliath year. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, it sets up for Tamia just to be a great second weekend. You know, I do agree with you, NC State, they're not a Cinderella. You can't be a Cinderella if you're a power conference team. I do think they're a really good story, though. You know, this is a team that wasn't really wasn't in NCAA tournament mix at all. They go on a crazy run, what, win five games in as many days in the ACC tournament, you know, beat Carolina and their rivals, Carolina and Duke. You know, the coach was on the hot seat, and now here they are in the Sweet 16. Yeah. It's kind of what people love about March is you could be having a disappointing year, and all of a sudden you put a few really good weeks together, and now you're, you know, it changes everything. And look, who knows? I mean, I think Marquette beats them, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's a, you know, anyone's game with 5 minutes to go. NC State's playing great. They've, you know, they've got a ton of confidence. They have momentum. So I you know, it's a fun story, even though it's not a Cinderella story.
Yeah, absolutely. They may be the hottest team in the country right now, winning the five games, as you said, in a row in the ACC tournament. And I believe they did that in 5 days, five games in 5 days, and yep. Winning the first two games of the tournament. I do think they've kind of become the darlings.
And don't forget, that first game against Louisville, they were in trouble.
Yeah.
They easily could have lost. I think they might have been down at halftime. They easily could have lost that game. Instead, they find a way to win that game, and they go on this incredible run. Now they've won seven straight. And here they are in the Sweet 16. It's such a weird sport we have here.
It is. Now, I've heard you say, you know, this is the NCAA tournament, and in some years it works out like this, and some years it doesn't. But what I've tried to do this week is spend some time thinking about, you know, why is it this year that, you know, we're not seeing the underdogs win as many games? And I think, and this is just my perspective, a couple of the reasons that I think we're seeing this goes back to the NIL and the transfer portal. And so with the NIL, you know, you're seeing, when you look at rosters, you're seeing older rosters than what we have seen in the past. I mean, think back a few years ago when we had all these one and dones.
Right.
You're just not seeing that now, because when you have these NBA guys who are on the fringe, right, maybe a late second round pick, there's more incentive for them to stay in college because of that NIL money. I mean, think about John Calipari in Kentucky. I mean, he's being scrutinized right now based on his philosophy of how he has built his teams. And I think leadership at Kentucky may want him to start looking at, you know, bringing in some more transfers and things like that. So, again, going back to the transfer portal, as I said, as the other reason is, again, looking at the construction of these rosters, you're getting some mid-major players that are going to these high majors, like Dalton Knecht from Tennessee. You know, played a couple years at Northern Colorado. He was maybe a standout at the mid-major level, and then that type of team loses that star player. They go to a high major, and you know, it's like they're rich getting richer. So I'm just kind of curious to get some of your thoughts, whether or not you agree with some of that, and do you think this is a trend that maybe you'll see continue?
You know, look, it's valid. There's no question about that. You know, the low of the mid-major guy, we're seeing it this week with the transfer portal exploding. The low of the mid-major guy are looking to cash in, and they deserve it. Now, you also have to look at it, too, though, you know, is there are also down transfers. You know, around here, I like to look at what Hofstra has been able to do the last few years, where they've gotten a guy like Darlinson I know he's now back in the portal, but they got a guy like Darlinson Dubar, who was at Iowa State, didn't play, came here, became a star. They got a guy like Tyler Thomas, who was at Sacred Heart, came here, became a star. They got a guy like Aaron Estrada, who was at Oregon, came to Hofstra, became a star. And I know they haven't gotten the tournament, but they've had success through the transfer portal as well. So it kind of works both ways, yeah, where low and mid majors can also have success through the transfer portal, whether it's up transfers or down transfers. But look, it's valid. I mean, the most successful teams are experienced. A lot of them have key transfers. You look at UConn, Cam Spencer, and Tristan Newton. You know, Spencer came from Rutgers. Tristan Newton was at East Carolina, and, you know, I mean, he's one of the best transfers we've seen. So, I mean, it definitely is valid, and it's definitely something to watch. But look, I mean, we had the transfer portal last year, and we had plenty of upsets.
Right. True.
So, true. You know, we had a Final Four with San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, and, you know, it to me, it's just something that's you got to monitor. And look, if we the next few years we see it happen where it's you're not seeing upsets, it's definitely something to keep in mind. But I think right now just 1 year is the sample size is way too small.
Yeah. That'll be something that I definitely keep a close eye on. But again, just something that I was taking a look at when I look at, you know, the age of the rosters. And we think about, years ago, and I'm talking the 80s, you had guys stay 4 years, and then we go through this era of the one and done for a while, and now it does seem like it's changing back to where, you know, you're seeing guys like Armando Bacot, you know, staying around.
Thing you have to keep in mind, too, is a lot of these guys are playing a fifth year with the COVID year, and that's going to run out, obviously. That we're only going to get, I think, one more year, really, of that. You have to take, you know, we got to take into that account as well. This is kind of an anomaly because of COVID, where you're having guys who are extra older playing a fifth year. I still think experience is going to win, but maybe not quite to the extent it is now, because you're not going to have guys who are 25, 26 years old.
That's a great point you make. The COVID extra year there is definitely probably the third factor in maybe what we're seeing. All right, we're going to wrap it up with just one more here I have for you. We have 16 teams left. You talked about some of the matchups that you liked already. When you look at the regions, okay, which team do you think, based on who's still around and who's still alive, which team has the easiest path, in your opinion, to the championship?
That's a really good question. I don't know if there is one. I mean, I would probably go UConn just because I think they're the best team. I felt like they're the best team all year. I think they're better than they were last year. But even UConn, I don't think, has an easy road. San Diego State is tough. Jalen Ledet is having an awesome year. And then if they get through that, they got to play either the number one offense, the number one defense in the country, which won't be easy. And look, they are Boston. You figure they're going to be UConn-heavy crowds. You know, look, you look at a North Carolina, they probably have to get past Arizona. You look at a Houston, they have a hot Duke team, and then probably Marquette. You look at Purdue, and, you know, and their road is obviously not easy with Gonzaga and then either Tennessee or Creighton. I mean, there really is no easy road. I'd probably go UConn because I think San Diego State's one of the worst teams of the 16 left. But there really is no easy road. That's what makes this round and the next two rounds so great is all the team. We have so many really good teams left and so many really good players that I think they're out of, you know, what we have, eight. So we have 12 games left before the Final Four. Out of those 12, maybe two or three will be lopsided. But I'd be stunned if we get any more than that. I think there are a lot of really good games coming up and just an awesome, awesome Elite Eight coming on the way.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And the great thing is, in a few days, we're going to find out. So that's really exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I know you are. Go out there and give Zach a follow on X at @NYPost_Brazil. That's BRAZILLE. Zach, we thank you so much for the time and all of your insight, and we appreciate you joining us this week.
My pleasure. Have a good one, man.